sweat the technique.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
As the Jalen Green shine started to, I guess, dim, 9506, only absolute clowns bought into a 15-game run is anything other than a blip. He's not a bum, but still disappointing. 15 games is a lot.
Yeah, it is.
It's almost a quarter of the year.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that it's easy to say. You can always criticize him when he's down. But he had two runs this year that were of substance. He had two substantial amounts of game times stacked and racked with unbelievable numbers. I think we're past the bust conversation.
Well, that's not what he said, though. He said he's not a bum. He just said that it's a blip. That this is that.
Well, okay.
That
I think he's shown more than a blip. I think he can be an above average NBA player.
Well, I mean, the conversation. Though,
I think the
more...
texture can say that too, though. I mean, the texture isn't saying that he's not fine.
It's fine. The conversation is more: is he like your building block? In March, he was looking like your building block. We were having a conversation of taking him over Şengün.
I still would. I still would.
And that's the conversation we can have. But I mean, his April numbers have been far off from what he did in March.
Yeah, they've been better than Şengün's though. Şengün's numbers.
I don't know. Şengün hasn't missed a shot.
I still don't know who he is. I don't know who Jalen Green is in terms of his status in the NBA. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, what we would consider a superstar, a second-tier player, a third-tier player. He's still super young, and he's going into the second year of Ime Udoka. I think next year is the make-or-break year for Jalen Green.
And it, obviously for the Rockets it has to be because contractually you either have to pay him or he can walk. But when you look at it, I think he's an above-average NBA player. Now, is that on a bad team? Because it's easy for a lot of guys. He can play in this league. He's shown me enough that I believe from a basketball perspective he can play in this league.
I think everybody would say that, though. Like, I don't think that's...
There were some people when he was really bad early in the season that were starting to question.
I'm talking about having this conversation now. I don't think there's anybody in the world that right now would be like, yeah, Jalen Green's not an NBA player.
No, but a lot of people are talking about him as a max guy, and that's
a huge difference.
And I know, and that's what I'm getting to. So... My belief is that he's an above-average player in this league. But if the Rockets are the team that has to make, and they're the only team that can make the decision, are we going to franchise him, max him out, sign him, or are we going to do something with him? I don't think that's a decision set in stone by any means yet. I think that's something that they really are going to have to contemplate starting with this offseason. And you know, a month ago I was saying, look, good coaches can find a way to exploit the best offensive capabilities of a big like Şengün and a wing like Jalen Green. I don't think you have to make that decision yet, but that time's coming real quick in this offseason, I think, is where it starts.
I don't think you have to do it this offseason,
No,
though,
it's
right?
Where it starts. You have to consider what you're going to do.
I mean, I don't want to nitpick it, but I think you start the evaluation when you like bring in a guy for the very first time. But like, you don't have to make that decision. Sure, the evaluation's always going on. But I've seen always the discord, like, we got to sign on this off. No, you don't. Like, he's still under contract for next year, and then he's a restricted free agent after that where you can match any sort of deal. So you're not necessarily in this, like, huge rush to get something done.
No, it's about you either value him or you got to get value for him, and when is the final time you can do that with him? And I think that's why it's a real critical offseason, because you have seen better from him, but you've seen a very uneven sample size. So what do you have, and when do you need to make that final determination? I think this offseason is when they start thinking about it hard, because you want to, if you don't want him, you got to get something for him.
But I think the real question though is, when is the deadline? Because like, who cares when you're starting that process? The real thing is, and like, we know deadlines spur action, right? So like, when is the deadline of when you have to make a decision on your long term plans for Jalen Green?
To me, the safe answer is the trade deadline next season.
Okay. Yeah, I don't. I would have a little bit different answer, but I don't hate that answer. Like that answer's fine with me.
Well, because you still conceivably can keep him and get into that option year.
Yeah. Well, next year is the club exercise option, and that the year after that's when he's a restricted free agent. But you could also do sign and trade stuff.
Right.
Like you could lock it up and then trade him. So like, he doesn't lose all value if he plays the entire season with you next year.
But if he plays badly next year, then the value continues to go down. This offseason, he's shown enough where I think he still has substantial value in the league.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think you got to start the evaluation clock, the hard evaluation clock, as soon as the season's over.
If you didn't have Ime in his first year, and this was like, let's just say Ime was the head coach for Jalen Green his entire career, his entire NBA career, I think that you can make the argument that you should make the decision this offseason. Mm-hmm. Because, okay, let's either you're paying him or you're trading him. But because it's the first year of Ime Udoka, that's why I want to see what Jalen Green looks like next year.
Okay, but why? I mean, because...
Because he's finally been coached, and I want to see what he does in the offseason after finally having a real coach.
Yeah, I was thinking about it from the Udoka perspective of, you know, if he had been with him the entire time and he'd been in the league for a couple of years. You know what he wants. You know what he expects. I think he'd already...
His development would be further along.
And he'd also probably already have made his decision, cut and dried.
Ime?
Yeah.
Oh, no doubt.
Yeah, for sure. So, yeah, look, I think obviously because Ime is going to be here for quite a while, that he's going to have the biggest critique and he's going to have the biggest say-so in the room in terms of, yeah, I want another year with this guy, or I believe that we can still get more out of him. Or, you know, if he's done with him, I think they'll start looking long and hard on what to do.
4-6-3-1, Şengün played as a top five center for 3/5 of the season. He's a better asset than Jalen. Guards are easier to obtain. I agree that guards are easier to obtain. I think a lot of times... Our opinion, fans' opinions on players are 95% driven on what they do on the offensive end.
Oh, for sure.
I don't think that we put nearly as much weight on the defensive side of the ball. Alpi Şengün, offensively, agreed, is a top 5-7 center in the NBA for 3/5 of the season. Also true, Alpi Şengün is a defensive liability.
I would say he went from liability to a less-than-average defender. I don't know that he's completely as much of a liability as he was under Silas. He started to understand some concepts and some switching and some things, but he can't move his feet, and laterally, he's dead in the water. And so in today's NBA, unless you're playing some of those top five centers offensively that are low post-based guys, he's tough. He's a tough guy to believe can guard anybody one-on-one.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN-1953. I want to see how he does in the playoffs. We've seen what Harden did. The issue with that is you might not have the opportunity.
Talking about Green?
Yeah. If Jalen Green is under contract next year, final year of his club, you know, exercise option, restricted free agent after that, if the Rockets don't make the playoffs next season, then we're not going to have the opportunity to see what Jalen Green does in the playoffs before you do have that deadline on what you decide to do with him.
That's why this run was so important, because there were games that mattered late down the stretch where, whether it was a playoff game officially or not, they were do-or-die situations for you. And so you started to see some of that, because you're right. There's a chance, I'm not going to say a pretty good chance, but there is a legit chance that you never see him play a playoff game for the Rockets. So you've got to start making that overall evaluation right now. And you take everything that you've seen this season, you start talking to Udoka and the coaches and looking around the league too and seeing, hey, with the run that he had, people were starting to value him higher again. Where's he at value-wise? Where do we value him? What do we think? And then you got to start making some hard calls.
Yeah. Both agree it's next year.
Say again.
Not something you do in the offseason.
Say one more.
Both agree that deadline's next year, not something you do in the offseason.
Well, I think it's possible you could do it in the offseason. I wouldn't, but I think that there's a chance that they do something this offseason. I just think that Udoka is one of those guys that is kind of more focused on veterans that he doesn't have to work so hard to coach because he can trust. I don't think that he has that trust built up. That's why I'm saying it's really going to be on Udoka's shoulders to say, no, I still believe there's more to get out of him that I can get out of him that we can use, that he's going to be a guy we build around. Or if Udoka is hell-bent on getting a veteran, I think they could pull the plug this offseason.
What are you basing that off of, though, that he wants more veterans than younger players he's developing?
I mean, whether you believe the Brooklyn rumors or not, there was conversations internally where he was more focused on getting guys that can help him win now and in the next year to 2 years, as opposed to taking or sticking with guys that are going to still take a couple years to develop.
I haven't seen an action that says that other than spending money in free agency.
I'm talking about the conversation.
I haven't seen those. So no. That's why I'm only speaking on what I've seen.
Right, and I'm only speaking on what I've been told.
Right.
And so from the conversation standpoint, I still think that there is a notion with him that he would rather have some, not just, you know, Jeff Green, Fred VanVleet and Dylan Brooks, but there's a guy maybe a little younger, but still has his NBA resume together that he was more intrigued by.
713-780-ESPN. By the way, I think the Rockets are halfway to being a playoff team. They finished their home record on the year 27-14. 27-14 is better home record than Dallas, who's in fifth, New Orleans, who's in sixth, Phoenix, who's in seventh, Sacramento, who's in eighth. Half game behind LA, who's in ninth, and a better record than Golden State, who's 20-19, who's in 10th place. if the Rockets are just halfway decent at, on the road next year, they're a playoff team. If they were halfway decent on the road this year, let's see, they were 12-26, so they were 7-game difference. So they won 7 more games at, on the road, and they were just 19-19, just a .500 record on the road. That would give them up to 46 wins. 46 wins right now would be tied for 7th place in the Western Conference and 1 game back in the 6th.
Yeah,
the
look,
for the 16th.
The batter's eye on the road has been really difficult in the NBA this year. I think that that's the sign of an immature team. An immature team that can't go on the road and get wins, but I think that there's enough talent, and I think that what they experienced this last run down the stretch, I think they're a team that's going to win 46 games next year.
They were way better last month on the road.
Sure
they won more games the last month on the road than they did prior, the entire season prior to the last month of the year. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. When, you mentioned we're talking about the, when do you make this decision on Jalen Green, when do you DFA Jose Abreu? 713-780-3776. It's the HRMP listener line. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
When do you DFA Jose Abreu? What is this music? I don't know how. Are you feeling this?
This is
Allison Chains.
Who is it?
Allison Chains?
I thought it was either STP or someone like that.
Yeah, it's Allison Chains, No Excuses.
It feels very mellow.
Okay.
I wouldn't think of Allison Chains as mellow, though.
I mean, not every song they have is the same tempo.
Okay.
What band does?
True. It's called talent. When do you DFA Jose Abreu? 713-780-3776.
Man, you able to finish the segment now that you got bummed out coming in?
I wouldn't say bummed. It was more, it just, you know, altered the vibes.
You should we start over? Should I play some music? Have you come in again?
It's not worth doing that. Okay. No. I am talent after all.
I it's not hard to
maybe do it for the talent. No. When do you DFA Jose Abreu?
Man, I look at the situation. I don't think the Astros are going to do it this year. I personally would start considering it in June. if you saw what you saw a year ago and somehow he saved face for the entire season just by doing what he did down the stretch with some big hits. But then to come back and do the same thing, only worse, to start this year, if we start getting into June and he's still this bad, I know it's a hard pill to swallow for Jim Crane and the fact that he didn't have a GM. It was basically on him and Bagwell and the money that he threw out. But if it is about truly about winning, like he says, and he's that bad, he's got to go. I'd say in June.
Yeah. I think you're still a ways away because, I mean, John Singleton, you're DFAing him before you're DFAing
sure.
Jose Abreu. So there's still, I mean, he's not the worst player on the roster. Some might argue that. Some might say John Singleton's better than Jose Abreu right now. And you might be right. But if they got rid of one, they would get rid of Singleton before they got rid of Abreu. So I still think we're a ways away. I have a really tough time believing that they do it this year.
I agree.
Because he's still got next year under contract. I think that they're going to, like, the earliest I could possibly see them move on from Abreu is like, you'd make a trade in July for a first baseman. Jose Abreu's not doing anything for you on the bench because he can only play first base and DH. He's not hitting. Mm-hmm. So what's the point of DHing him and playing at first base every now and then if you trade for a first baseman? The only way I can see him being DFA'd this season is if they acquire, and I'm not even talking about Lo Profito. I'm talking about somebody who's outside of the organization, whether it's Brandon Belt, whether it's via trade. That's the only way I can envision Jose Abreu being DFA'd this year.
Yeah, I look at it personally and say the June answer. I look at it from an Astros perspective, and I don't think there is an answer this season. I think that Crane is going to be hell-bent. You might see him have another back issue. You might see him do what they did last year and give him kind of a clear your head, work on whatever you need to work on, but don't worry about playing in games for a while again, trying to save face and hope he can find it again. But I just think because of the finances, they're not going to do anything with him this year except for maybe put him on the IL and there's a possibility to demote him. But from an organizational standpoint, I can't see them doing anything this season.
See, I think the finances is absolutely right. Like, it's true. I don't think it's great operating process, though, or operating procedure. you're going to pay him regardless. Like, you're paying him no matter what. And if you're paying him to give you below average play at first base, you are willing to put a player out there who you know is awful, not very good, and is hurting you, hurting your team. You're going to have to pay him either way. So do you want to put somebody out there when you're paying him to give you below average play at first base? Or do you pay him and then try to make an additional move, spend some money at bad money, so you can at least elevate the production you're getting from the position?
Look, I believe that they should spend a little bit more to get some return on the investment that you can't get from the player that you spent too much on. But you know, their hard evaluation is going to be, can he find it again? Because last year, a lot of people thought he was done. When he was so bad for three quarters of the year. And then they blamed it on the back, or if there was a back issue, that's what they finally used to put him on the IL. When he came back, he looked like a different player for a small window of time. So now are you saying that it's so far gone that there's no way he's ever going to get it back? Or if you're the owner who writes the checks, and because you made the move, you believe he can find it again, and I don't know that he's going to want to broach that subject of the point of no return.
Yeah. If I'm running the team, I'm signing Brandon Belt, and I'm going to let Belt and Abreu platoon at first base the rest of the year or until the deadline if I'm not getting production there, and then I'm looking for my new first baseman. And the new first baseman next year could be Yiner Diaz, quite frankly. It could be Joey Loperfido. It could come from within the organization. But keeping Jose Abreu in the lineup every day is costing your team production. You're going to pay him regardless.
Let's just be honest. He's worse than Maldi right now. You know, for everybody that said that there was an out waiting to happen with Maldonado at the bottom of your lineup a year ago, right now, he's less than 200. He has no pop, where Maldi, if nothing else, he gave you double-digit home runs the last couple of seasons, as bad as he was and as many at bats as he threw away. Right now, for as much as everybody at the start of the season said, we're finally escaping that out at the bottom of the lineup and getting away from Maldonado offensively, you're kind of right back in it until you figure out what you're going to do with him.
If I can play devil's advocate, though, for 1 second, maybe if this is completely ludicrous, tell me and dismiss it. But we're talking about a 12-game sample size. I mean, Kyle Tucker had a 12-game sample size in the playoffs where he hit just as poorly as Jose Abreu is hitting now. Is it completely impossible, considering how hot Abreu was from mid-August through October, that this is just a slump? Because, I mean, 12 games, guys go through 12-game slumps all the time. Bregman's doing it. He does it every year. Could we look back here in mid-June and go, well, his 12-game slump was just that. It was a 12-game slump, and then eventually his numbers returned to the mean?
No. What is his mean? Like, that's the other – like, somebody texted in and said he's a notorious slow starter. Yes, that is true. He's a notorious slow starter. He is also a notoriously bad Houston Astro.
Yep.
Like, he's had 152 games, 631 plate appearances. He's a .228 hitter with a .654 OPS. So, like, what sample size are we going to look at? Are we going to cherry-pick 2 months where he was okay? He wasn't great. Where he was okay, are we going – because people – well, it's too small of a sample size to make the decision now. Okay, I hear you. So, let's take a look at the totality of his entire tenure as a Houston Astro, which is incredibly poor for a first baseman.
Because you used the Tucker analogy. Yeah, he was awful in the playoffs, but you knew Kyle Tucker for the recent history of Kyle Tucker in an Astros uniform in the last couple of years. Even if he had a bad little stretch, there weren't multiples, and it wasn't this bad over two seasons.
What was your time frame? Last year?
Yeah, it was whenever he came back from the injured list. It was mid-August through the playoffs.
So August 23rd through end of year, Jose Abreu hit .248 with an .845 OPS. You would love an .845 OPS.
Yeah, his home run and RBI, when you look at returning from the injured list, then you add on the playoffs, both of those on-pace numbers are astronomical.
Astronomical?
I see what you did.
They're not astronomical. They're good from what Jose Abreu has been than that.
His RBI pace is like 150, 160.
I remember that stat.
That's
astronomical. No, I'm not saying he could actually produce that, but
RBIs is a dependent variable statistic. Like, you need other people to up your total for
his
RBIs.
His home run total, though, his home run on pace. That's was also
I'm cool looking at home
too.
Runs. I don't like looking at RBIs when we're talking about a player's productivity or a player's what you project them to do. Runs is fine. I mean, I like the OPS number.
Yeah,
obviously.
OPS number is good. The average is not great. .248.
No, but I'd take it.
But if he had pop at all,
over average.
Because at the end of the year, he finally had pop that you need out of a first baseman.
If you're holding out hope for that, like let's say you're holding out a hope, because I mean the Astros are going to hold out hope. Like,
yeah,
we
mean,
know
every guy on
their
this
play
has had a slump longer than 12 games.
We know. Yeah, I mean Jose Abreu's not 12 games though. like we this was last so, year.
I'd be with you if it wasn't such a clear, you know, separation from pre-injured list to post-injured list. Like as soon as he came back, it was like a switch got flipped.
Last year, when did he start treading water? Being at least somewhat respectable. Was it June?
Yeah,
May?
It was
late
kind of,
May, June?
Probably June.
I'm not even talking about that, though. I'm talking specifically about the IL. When he came back from the IL.
No, I know what you're talking about, but I'm just saying, if we went through the
That's
first,
also a small sample, though, by the way. Like, it's only 31 games.
But if we went through the first 2 months...
Yeah,
small, I mean, we also have to include playoffs also, though, because he was also hot in the playoffs.
So we went through the first two months last year before he started to tread water and be respectable.
Right.
So... You're willing to wait with him and keep throwing him out there until June this year?
I mean, what's your other option, though? I mean, we talked about John Singleton.
Well, I think that's the problem that we've been talking about.
If I was running the team, he'd be Brandon Belt.
Okay, that's fair. I'm just saying, I mean, clearly they don't seem to like Brandon Belt for whatever reason, and that's obviously a fault of their own. But if they're not going to sign him, then I mean they don't really have the internal option at this point. So
I
don't see any other choice but to wait it out and hope that it's just a slump.
Yeah, but I think I'm not going to speak for Jeremy, but I think that the point before you even DFA him is there should already be someone on this roster that's a bench player capable of being a starter or at least capable of being better than Abreu that's playing at least part time now with the possibility of playing more. Because you've already seen this script play out last year.
I agree. That's a failing of the offseason, but with where they're at now, I just don't see the option.
No. Well,
if they're not going to sign Brandon Belt.
I think there's multiple options that would give you better productivity, Brandon Belt. But if not Brandon Belt, Caratini catching. Caratini literally pinch hit for Abreu yesterday. You move Yiner to first base. Dubon, I think, would give you more offensive production than Jose Abreu.
And you still have
– And I think Lopetito would.
Yeah. For sure.
So that's four
his
options. Three of them that are rated
so high.
Yeah, but at least he's got pop.
He does have pop. Yeah, he does have pop.
He showed it in spring. He's shown it in Sugarland to where at least he's got more pop than Abreu.
When he does connect, it goes a long way. For sure.
I mean, both things can be true. Like, Lopetito could have a very high swing and miss rate and a strikeout percentage. Would he give you better production at the big league level than Jose Abreu? Both things are probably true. But let's operate with your premise for a moment, Brian. If we're operating with that mindset, hey, you know, injured list, got him hot for the final 30 games plus the playoffs. Let's put him on the injured list tomorrow. Bad, you know, top of your elbow. What? How long are you willing to live with that thought? Like, how far are you willing to go? Or the back of your mind, well, he's going to get hot at some point.
June.
Okay, June 1st, June 30th.
Yeah, June 1st. Yeah.
If he doesn't get it going by June 1st, you're looking to replace him as the everyday first baseman.
I'm starting to put the wheels in motion of either call up Lopetito or you're looking at the trade market.
I mean, he's batting eight. He got pinch hit for yesterday by Caratini. He's batting eight today. Like, it goes to show you what I'm not arguing with you.
Okay.
It just goes to show you what Espada thinks of him right now.
Oh, clearly. Oh,
because last year,
he was
still in the cleanup spot.
But, yeah, that's year one of a deal that they were hoping and praying at some point that looked like it wasn't a complete failure. But at this point, he's like, in the corner we're in, we've been through this before. We've seen this dance before, and it doesn't look like it's going to end the way it ended last year so far. And because it's repetitive, it's 2 years in a row. Yeah, maybe he's a slow starter, but he doesn't look like a major league hitter at the plate. I mean, he looks like he is lost.
He looks washed. He can't catch up to a hard fastball.
He cannot catch up to a fastball.
When did he hit his first home run last year? Wasn't
June, I think.
It was in Oakland.
Yeah, I know, but it wasn't like deep into May
or
June.
Where.
No, I'm just saying. I know it was late. It was like, I want to say it was in June, and it was in Oakland. And he sprinted around the bases and slid into the dugout.
I think it was June.
That's kind of my overall point. Like, I mean, we saw this example last year. Obviously, there was the injury variable in there as well. But even after a long stretch of him not being productive, not looking a major league hitter. He wasn't on a heater. He got what, but when he came back, he was on a heater, and obviously was much more productive.
713-780-ESPN. When do you DFA Jose Abreu? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We are The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Glenn Davis is in the house, by the way.
Oh, really?
Soccer Matters coming up at 6. Yeah, Panzon is here.
Paisan.
No, Panzon means fat boy.
Oh, does he have his knee brace on?
He does, yeah. Yeah, he smells fantastic, too.
I wonder how long he's got really good.
Why'd you smell him?
It's heavy cologne. What do you mean? I walk by him.
Oh, let's see.
I walk by him. He smells great.
To me, if the cologne is that heavy, then I wouldn't say he smells good. At that point, I'm kind of, I don't know, annoyed by it.
So much to say to that.
No. Go ahead, Joe. Say it.
No, there's plenty of people in this office, then, if that's the case, that are annoying on a daily basis.
I know. Yeah, no, like there's sometimes like, man, you could have not bathed in it. That would have been fine.
Yes, there's some battling perfumes on a daily basis.
Yeah. Joe Espada talked about Jose Abreu batting in the 8 spot. Chandler Rome tweeting it. Joe Espada said he met with Abreu about the move and said, I think he understands that he has some work to do and we're going to do what's best for the team. He's on board with that.
Good.
But is he on board for hitting the baseball?
Does he really have any choice but to be on board?
He's got 19 million reasons why he better be.
Is he going to hit the baseball? 713-780-ESPN. Branham, who I love, is sounding a lot like an unpleased wife. Okay, whatever that means.
I wonder what topic that was about.
I'm not sure. It was at 5:16. I think it was even before the music.
5:16? That was
maybe. I think it was Rockets.
That was five o'clock was the.
We got into Rockets late. One. We carried something over for a little bit.
Oh, we carried the traffic
about the
stuff
traffic.
Over.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what it meant. Beaumont Todd, is Abreu exempt from being sent to AAA? Maybe if he went down, he could find a swing.
Does he have options?
He's out of options now. You would have to – I'm pretty sure that he has enough status where he would have to accept a minor league assignment. First off, you would have to DFA him.
Right.
You'd have to designate him for assignment, but that's not the issue. No one's going to pick him up. No one's going to claim a salary.
Contract,
like,
yeah.
They should DFA him, and let's see. If somebody wants Jose Abreu at a salary, great. So DFAing him means nothing because no one's going to pick him up. But then he would also have to accept the minor league option, which I doubt he would do. And then the other after that, you flat out release him and you pay him the entirety of his contract.
So explain to me, though, if you DFA him, right?
Put him
and
on
he
waivers.
Accepts it, and then he goes to
well,
Sugar
he doesn't. No, you can't. He doesn't. The DFA and the
minor league.
I'm
sorry, sorry, sorry. Yeah, he accepts the minor league assignment.
Yes.
But then if you want to have him join the big club again, do you have to – is he still under the same contract?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't get out of the contract unless somebody claims him off of waivers.
I thought he would still get that and then almost like being DFA'd, and then if you wanted him to come back, you have to pay him another contract.
No.
Or make a new deal with him.
No, you don't tear up the contract ever. Like even if he got claimed,
it's the
same contract. Major League Baseball contracts are the best. So the minor league option is not feasible. 1248, you released him yesterday or DFA him yesterday. 6927, 32 games, 20% of the season. After that, got to say bye to Jose Abreu. Abreu is known to have a slow start in his career. Yes, he's also known to be a bad Houston Astro. This guy says, is it weird that Abreu rode home by himself after game 5 of the LCS last season? Is he not a good fit within the clubhouse? I don't remember hearing that.
That's the first I've heard of it, too.
I haven't heard of that either.
It's from Dallas going back to Houston. If he had family watching the game and he felt like that's what he wanted to do.
I've heard he's a great teammate.
Yeah.
I've heard that he's well-liked and everybody really likes him. He's a professional, and even though when he's slumping, you can never tell it, and he's always very personable. That's what I've heard about Jose Abreu. So I've never heard he's a bad teammate.
You can see that there is a relationship with him and Bregman and Altuve for sure. I don't know how it is with the whole team, but those are pretty substantial guys. If they like you, you're probably a decent dude.
Oh yeah, he was seen at Bucky's on I-45 after the game. I do remember that now. The Bucky's picture, but
oh,
I never
was at Madisonville. The Madisonville.
Yeah,
Bucky's?
I do remember that now.
Okay,
could have been the one in Ennis, I guess.
But can I give you a potential scenario where that plays out? Wife and or family is there, and especially if you're driving back after the game where it's dark and you feel better driving than your wife, and you say I'm going to drive home with the family.
Yeah, I don't think it's an issue.
I don't either.
And I've only heard he's a good teammate. I've never heard anything after that. Blaine, is Caratini good enough to catcher to move Yiner to first, or is it too early for this move? It's probably too early for the move. But, yeah, he's a good enough catcher, I think, for Yiner to play first. Wouldn't be shocked to see a phantom injury come up soon, sit him down for a bit, and then send him down to the Sugar Land to try to rehab his swing. That's a great call. I mean, that's a way to get him down to the minors is you place him on the injured list and you give him a rehab assignment, which for hitters I think is 20 days. Pitchers is 30. So...
Well, that's when I said, when do we get the mysterious injury to pop back up? Because I think that's maybe the only way that you start letting him figure it out.
Yeah. Sounds like it's time to do it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think he did not do a rehab assignment last year. They waived it.
I don't remember him playing in Sugar Land.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, he stayed with the big club, and then they brought him right back into the lineup. He never went to Sugar Land.
8437, I feel like BMAC has had the most sound argument of you three so far, so I put my money in his basket with June 1st. All right, never text the show again. 2227 yesterday. I'm just kidding. This Brandon says, 2128 says, Brandon, he's talking about Brian. He said, Brandon said RBIs multiple times during the entire conversation. Check the tapes. I didn't notice. But maybe
I feel like if I had said that, you would have called me out pretty quickly.
I think so, too.
Because you tried to do that the other day.
03Y. We never got those tapes, by the way. We never got those tapes.
I wasn't in the studio. I can't tell you what to do.
03, yeah. You burned them. 0315, Brian is right. Give a Brady some time. 12 games in is enough. Okay, that's fine. But then what is your number? Like, you can say that 12 games isn't enough, which is fine. Like, I'm with you on that. I don't think 12 games is enough either. Now, I don't think there's hope of him coming back. But what is your date? What is that date where you say, okay, you can't be our everyday first baseman again? Okay, we might have to move on. We might just have to realize this contract is poor. We're going to pay the contract no matter what. Are you paying the contract with Jose Abreu getting at bats or with Jose Abreu being a free agent? Like,
I'm
that's
also
a conversation
curious
to make.
How tight they stick to that opinion if he comes up a couple more times in situations with runners in scoring position and fails miserably. And everybody, even the most staunch supporters, are going to start changing their mind going, sample size or not. If you're not catching up to fastballs and you're not even able to capable of getting runs in, especially if you've got a runner at third and less than two out, you can't even get a fly ball.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Brian, you said June 1st?
June 1st, yeah.
We're more anti-Abreu. Are we good with June 1st?
Yeah. I said mid-June.
Okay, that's even longer than Brian's.
I said mid-June, but I said I don't think the Astros are going to do it.
Right, but we're talking about if we were running the team.
Yeah, I'm running the team by mid-June.
So it sounds like y'all are cool. Like I think we can all settle with early June.
Yeah, I would say June 1st. Honestly, if you're asking what the team will do, I think it'll be until July.
It's two different conversations. I don't think the team would do it.
No, I don't think
they'll do it before next year. I think they could do it in the offseason. Unless they make a trade for a first baseman.
Yeah, because once you get to June 1st.
But their final hope is next offseason he figures something out.
I don't think so. I don't think they would bring him back for year three. If he was doing what he's currently doing. Unless he shows you a sign like he did last year. Mm-hmm. Last year he showed him a sign so they could easily roll it over. Plus, it's only the first 2 years. If he just is at this level, and like this level seems that it would be even his washed, you know, like swings and how he looks washed, he's probably going to be better than this by the end of the year. But if you don't get that up spike at all, I think they do DFA him in the offseason. Now, you could potentially make a trade, and you could DFA him that way. But if I were running the team, much different. I would go with early June. 50-30, BMAC is right. Getting a lot of love on the text line. 0108, it's not even so much about just his hitting. He became a liability at first, and his demeanor just is showing he doesn't want to be out there anymore. He looks tired
and
worn out.
Came in as a defensive replacement the other night. So made a heck of a scoop.
He does look tired and worn out and washed. I don't know about his mentality.
12 games into a season.
He's old. Yeah. There's a lot of thoughts. He might be older than 38.
Miguel Tejada situation?
He's 37. Well, I'm not saying that I said it. I'm saying there's a lot of talk of that.
I saw it today on Twitch. I just did Miguel Tejada, and he aged 2 years in a day.
Yeah. He signed him when he was 35, and he was 37 by the middle of the year.
Yeah.
Someone said Belt made $9.5 million next year. Crane's not paying that. I agree with you that he's not going to pay it.
But if you're not at a certain point when you're not on a roster by now?
Well, there's two angles to look at that. There is that one. Okay, well, Belt, you know, Brandon, you're not on a contract now. Maybe you take $4.5 million. Maybe we do it in the summer and you take a prorated $9 million deal, but you only get $4.5 million because you're only playing the second half of the year. The other angle to take of it is, and I agree with you, the Crane's not going to pay the Brandon Belt contract. I agree with you. But that means your priorities, the finances, and your priorities not winning. That's what it means.
Yeah, I mean, if you could get him for $5 million at a certain point, say around the end of May, middle of May, why wouldn't you? Like, you have to give yourself the best chance to win. You already know that you know it's not a runaway in the American League, and you haven't got off to a great start either. But if you want to truly compete, you have to have some kind of production out of first base, and you shouldn't have to break up your two catchers to try and figure out the answer.
Yeah, I'm with you. Oso, what's the benefit of DFA, the roster spot? Won't they still have to pay him? Yes, they'll still have to pay him. The benefit of the DFA is exactly what you mentioned, that he's no longer on the team, that it's addition by subtraction, that somebody else is getting his at-bats.
Yeah, and the opportunity to be better offensively and defensively.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. What is your car wreck of the day? And we also need to give Spencer Arrighetti a little song because he makes his Major League debut tonight. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, a word from my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at that neograft procedure. If you don't know what it is, but you're losing your hair and you don't think there's anything you can do about it, then you need to figure out what the neograft procedure is and consider if you would actually have it done. Because I did the procedure. And it has been a game changer. It is unbelievable. He does a great job. The numbers all say it, too, because of the fact that the success rate on all the hair that he's moving and putting where you need it is between 95 and 99% of all the follicles that are moved stay and grow and are with you for the long haul. That's what made me do the procedure because those are numbers that I can trust. The fact is that he told me, and I wasn't aware of this until I had my consultation with him, that you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head no matter how bald you go in other areas. So he takes some of those follicles and puts them where you need them and where you're missing them. And it makes an immediate difference because you see them there. And in 6 to 9 months, when you see the full results, they are a game changer. And for you as listeners to ESPN 97.5, you get a consultation like I had with Doc Linville and his staff for free. It normally costs $150. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com, set up an appointment. Go in, ask questions, get answers, figure it out for yourself. No pressure. It's up to you. Nothing on the dotted line, no money out of pocket, no commitment. Just you getting answers to your questions, getting information about the procedure, and seeing if it's right for you too. It was right for me. I would tell everybody in the world to consider it because of the success that I had because of it. Check them out today. Go to 975hair.com. Tell them I sent you by.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
What does Spencer Arrighetti's theme music need to be? This is pretty good.
This is like Godfather, right?
Yeah, it's the theme from The Godfather.
Okay.
We Honey Glazed Branham suggested Amore.
Yeah, that's Amore.
Amore sounds a little bit too like...
What about the theme from Rocky? Because he's the Italian Stallion.
You talking about the theme from Rocky, or are you talking about
the
Tiger?
I'm going to
fly now. With the horns.
I kind of like this.
Yeah, I do too.
This is good.
I want a mob boss out on the mound.
I know, me too.
Mowing people down.
Like he's going to, yeah.
Should ask Granato then.
Like, that's Amore. It's like a little bit too lovey for me.
Yeah, like that's like you're getting along with your opponent.
Yeah.
You're loving him.
This is
recognizable
strong.
Too. Every time you know, we would know where the minute we heard this that he's pitching. So this
yeah, everyone knows this.
What was the Rocky one? Let's at least listen to it to see how we feel.
Gonna fly now.
Gonna fly now with the Rocky. While he does that, I was watching Rory McIlroy. He said that he could name like every master champion, and then they asked him, "Do you know who?" So you might know the answer to this.
I didn't see the whole thing. I saw it start because I was like, "Come on!" They started with the year he was born.
Yeah, he got him all right.
And he got him right.
He had like a couple where he had some like hiccups or whatever. Tiger won his first Masters in 97. The champion in 96 and 98 blew my mind. Like, that's who Tiger was playing with whenever he was winning his first Masters. The 96 champion, former Houston Cougar, by the way, and then the 98 champion would blow your mind.
Freddie won it?
Nope. Wasn't Freddie.
Former U of H?
Yep. Not many people realize that he went to U of H for like a semester.
I don't know.
Nick Faldo.
Faldo went to U of H?
Yeah, Sir Nick Faldo went to U of H.
Wow.
He won
multiple green jackets.
I think he's won three. But he won in 96, Tiger won in 97, and then Marco Mera won in 98.
That's his boy, too.
Isn't it crazy that those are the guys surrounding Tiger's first Masters?
Yeah, Marco Mera was the guy that finally played Big Brother when the other guys that were trying to play Big Brother got him going on the other thing that got him in so much trouble later in his life, like MJ and Charles.
I like the first one.
Yeah, is this too recognizable to Philly?
I think so.
Yeah, I think
because he was nicknamed the Italian Stallion, that's what made me think of it.
I just think the Philly connection kind of,
yeah,
I don't know.
Faldo did one back-to-back 89-90, and then he won a third one in 96. So he does have three. No, it's funny, though, because Nick Faldo, he literally retired last year. Not from golf, from the booth.
Yeah,
and Tiger's
I liked him on the air, too.
He's really good.
Yeah, he was really good.
Yeah, I really liked him, too.
The other one that kind of on those same lines of the Houston connection to a foreign player that played golf there, is HBU. Colin Montgomery.
I didn't know he went to HBU.
Colin Montgomery went to, now it's HCU, but yeah, HBU, when it was HBU, Colin Montgomery won
there. Let's get to our car wreck of the day.
You all right?
My leg is broken, the bone's coming through.
Let me see. Give me your bone, you prick! Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
All right, what do we nominate for the car wreck of the day?
I think the first one is the easiest one. It would be the Astros runners in scoring position hitting last night.
5 of 18.
Not good.
Oof. 5 of 18 is not awful.
That first inning was to get only one run out of the first inning and that be the precursor to what was yet to come was terrible.
Alex Bregman. Bregman's up there too. Handedly lost the game for the Astros yesterday. Bases loaded, nobody on the first pop up. First and third, fourth inning with one out, strikes out. The play in the top of the fifth, or the bottom of the fifth to lead off the inning, the little foul ball that he didn't catch, lazy, in business for himself, and then he throws it away with two outs to allow the tying run to score. If Bregman makes one positive result in those four chances, Astros win. Alex Bregman single-handedly lost the game for the Houston Astros yesterday. That's what I'm nominating. Brian?
I've got two quick ones. Celtics-Bucks last night combined 2 free throw attempts for the entire game.
That's
for both
good officiating.
Teams.
I like that.
Yeah,
I like low free throws.
I guess just something's going on there. And then I'm going to nominate. Yes. I'm going to nominate possibly literally Joel for we found out earlier today laying on his horn every single day when he's in traffic.
I don't lay on the horn every single day. But I probably use it every day. I'm just being honest.
You're inviting trouble here, Joel.
I like the laying on the horn move. I'm a fan of that move. Every single day is a bit much.
That's a lot, Joel.
It's a bit much.
Being honest,
Poncho
don't
says,
piss me off on the road. You won't get the horn.
How will they know it's you?
Huh?
How will they know it's you?
Because it's quick. Because I don't lay on the horn.
I'm saying, if they don't want to make you mad on the road, how can they identify you?
I'm not telling you what I drive.
Give you a license plate. Let everybody know. Yeah,
I mean, you used to have the Packer sticker on the back, but I think that's gone now, isn't it?
What happened to it? You got mad at him?
Oh, it weathered.
I thought it was a Jordan Love thing.
It started bubbling up and everything. Just took it off.
Huh. Yeah.
It could have been that, too.
Are you going to get another one?
I don't know. I know it's a hot button or you want to talk about people that do it, but yeah, I've always done it.
We need to, I don't mind it. We need to make a bet where we can make our own Blankers bumper stickers. I want to win that bet so we can pick our own stickers to put on Blankers' vehicle.
Okay.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
I told you how scary it is at softball tournaments when people start yelling at me going, hey, we saw your car in the parking lot because it had a Packers sticker on it. It's like, well, that's not safe.
That's a low-key flex that he gets noticed in public.
No, it's really not.
A little bit.
In Santa Fe. Yeah, we're big in Santa Fe.
Clearly you are.
We are. They listen to the show every day. They made a point of saying they listen to us every day.
I don't know how to say this. Kind of a big deal.
Mahogany. Hall of Fame coming up at 7 o'clock. Booker T, the champion of the Killer Bee Fight Club bracket, by the way. Soccer Matters, Glenn Davis, live, smelling great, too. He'll be talking about the Champions League that's been great recently. All right, does it for us. Thanks to Brian for doing all the hard work. He's Blank on Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston, from East River 9.